I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Years and Timestamps, a book club podcast.
And I made bread for Will.
He did make bread. He brought it to me, and I am going to eat it at some point.
If it's good. There's no update yet on how Will feels about the bread, but we'll let you guys know next week. Keep you on
this bread watch.
Bread watch. This is bread watch. Nice.
A bread watching podcast.
Oh. You watch it rise.
Yeah. That's what you're doing now.
Yeah, man.
I'm just
yeah.
making bread all the time, apparently.
That's what I do, man.
Yeah,
with the economy.
The economy the way it is.
Well, I mean,
man's got to start making his own bread.
I mean, that is a silly thing to say because you can go to HEB and buy like a loaf of bread for a dollar. So it's really not that. I'm probably not even saving any money. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it would be a cool skill to learn how to do bread, you know. Yeah. And I've been working on like a live sourdough culture, which has been a lot of fun to like experiment with, and I've made a few sourdough loaves, and I have yeast, which I just made you a traditional like yeast white loaf. I mm-hmm. took like a butter and a zester, and I zested a lot of butter on top mm-hmm. of it while it was baking. But like I was telling you earlier, I don't have an oven right now, so I was doing it in my Ninja air fryer.
And oh yeah,
it bakes so. I mean, I've been doing so much better that it's rising up to the top and it's like touching the top of my air fryer. So I need to figure out how to fix my oven.
Yeah. Then you can get some super bread going.
Yeah. Then I'll have like all the rise and you'll be like, oh, dude, I hate buying bread because I'm so spoiled on Jordan's bread. Have you had Jordan's bread?
Right.
You'll be telling your family
it's
and friends.
It's too bad you won't be able to give me any more duck eggs. And then I could have the duck eggs and the Jordan's bread toast. And do you have a cow yet? Can I?
Farm life.
Farm life.
Farm life in the city. Right. Am I in a city? I'm in the burbs.
You're in the burbs.
Yeah. Outskirts.
Mm-hmm.
On the outskirts of Austin, you can find a farm in the middle of a suburb.
It's mostly ducks.
Don't go if you want to see ducks. They'll be leaving soon. Anyway, how do you feel about this? Oh, dude, also, sorry, every time they bring up eating duck, I feel like, which I don't know if that happens often in this book, but it happens in other things, and just like any time eating duck comes up, I'm just like, they make it sound so good that I'm just like, I'm going to go grab one.
Right.
Like,
they do.
Make it sound like it's red meat. It's always meat sort just of like a delicacy. Yeah, we should do one. Shokugeki.
Or it's just like, it's expensive to get duck or something like that.
Not in Texas. You can get them alive for $20. Not even from me. That's where we got them. Anyway, how do you feel about the book? You read the whole thing? You're committed to the series?
Right. I liked it. It's a enjoyable book. I think it's probably even good. And I can see why people like it so much and why it's sort of, you know, got the following that it does and why people are, you know, so excited for, you know, day three to happen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see myself reading it again. I think once I go through the series the one time, that'll be enough for me.
Yeah, it's hard to go back through a series while we're doing this show too, you know, just because
yeah, that certainly doesn't help. Yeah.
and it's such a long book. It's a big commitment. It's easier for me, like, especially having listened to this one a few times already, I can kind of do it like I'll do Harry Potter every now and then, just like as a nostalgic visit back with the guys. So that's probably, that could be why I like it so much. I heard something the other day that was a theory about like your familiarity with something is also increasing your like enjoyment of it.
Oh,
so
sure.
Like rewatching something can give you like more pleasure than like seeing it for the first time. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're not in. Whole hog?
No.
Just enough to finish?
Not yet. We'll see what, you know, day two does. I'm sure that it'll probably be mostly school still.
Yeah, there's a lot of the stuff I feel like that I've referenced like offhand during other podcasts, I feel like has been stuff that's developed in book two. It's, I don't know, it's one of the, I've said this before, it's one of the few series that comes up with new concepts that that make sense and fit in as well as their like foreign thoughts, foreign things that I've never thought of before in a fantasy world. And a lot of them are in this second book, I think. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. I'm looking forward to when I was texting you earlier, trying to figure out what book we were going to do. I was excited when you're like, we're not going to finish this series. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Because, I don't know, we looked at it today and it was like, it's a long one. So
it's really, really, really long.
So spoiler alert, that's what we're reading next.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what all happened in this last section? He left chasing the Chandrian because they like ruined a wedding. Dena happened to be at the wedding.
Yeah, up north.
Yeah.
And then they're out there in the woods for 4 days, which is, you know, like 20 chapters or whatever. And then they...
Very Dragon Ball Z of it.
Yeah. And they go back. And that's kind of really it. That's the last thing that really happens.
Yeah, Quoth goes back to the university. He gets in another fight with
Ambrose. And then they, you know, go to court against each other and he wins. But that's not terribly significant other than, you know, it's because he stumbles upon the name of the wind and then becomes a Ralar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's literally important to the story, but it's not really like an event. It was just like he got in a fight with the person he always gets in a fight with. The last like thing that happened was coming back from, you know, way up the road whenever he was trying to figure out more stuff with the Chandrian.
Yeah. Ambrose is a funny catalyst because he actually is like a big reason that a lot of like good...
He's like a more effective Draco. He does a better job at getting revenge.
Oh, that's not what I meant. I meant just that like when things happen like around him, like for example, this last interaction with him and Quoth, like Quoth finding the name of the wind, that was something that Illodan was like, okay, I'm going to start teaching him now, you know, like, and he started to teach, like, he's the one that sponsored him to R'hllar, like, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he teaches a class in the next book, which is cool. So, spoiler alert, sorry. But I mean, you probably saw that coming. I mean, if not a one-on-one class, a full class.
Right, like something has to happen. Yeah,
because he's already teaching him. And then he had like a brush with expulsion. So it was like at the end of the book, it was like, is this when he gets expelled from the university?
Right, yeah.
And for all these, like, and at the end too, he gave like three foreshadows of like, oh, tomorrow I'll tell you some of my favorite stories.
Yeah.
And, there's just like there's a lot that happens in the next book that I'm excited you want to read the next book. That was kind of it, just that he was taking him under, like Illodan was like reinvigorated to teach again.
Like there did need to be a reason for him to get to whatever the next step is to the next big chapter, because he can't just keep doing exactly what he's doing at this point, which is just going to school, having random exploits, and then, you know, Dena over and over again.
Is that the whole book? Because that was not going to be that great.
So like something else has to happen. So he does finally need to, you know, stumble upon some name.
Yeah.
And start so that path can start. And I mean, if it's going to be because anybody's antagonizing them, of course it's going to be Ambrose. But
oh, yeah. Well, that's where I was going. Ambrose was like, oh, and so him making Quoth find the name of the wind, that made Illodan start teaching, you know, like Quoth finding the name of the wind.
Yeah.
It made him start teaching again. And then like in the second book, there is another catalyst that like makes a big thing happen for him in the story. And I don't know. It's funny that like his school rival like makes these big pivotal moments that I never realized until we were just talking about it right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's like the four plate door. They were like alluding to that. That's the name of the third book, not the four plate door, but the door of stone. I think is what the last book is supposed to be alluded to. And he hasn't killed a king yet, so we're waiting for that. The name of the chronicles to come into it. There was also a lot of foreshadowing when Quoth was first saying, like, I'll give you the quick version of my story. Like, I loved, lost, fought, like, was betrayed, all this stuff.
Right.
And you can fit a few of those things in. But for him to be such, like, a magnificent piece of lore where, like, the old man in this, like, podunk town knows all of his stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much bigger is he going to get? Because he has to get to such a celebrity status. Like back in the day too, I feel like when there was no news and like reporting, the celebrities were like Billy the Kid and like old Rough Rouser down the street, or you know, like it was right. It was local like tough guys and like cowboys and stuff like that. It was like the trouble, like because of their reputation, like that's how you knew them. And I mean that could be why he went viral, you know, because and why everyone knows his story, because he does have like a like a mixed reputation of like, is he good or is he bad? We don't know how to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, at the very end, Bast gave a little bit of character insight. Like, we know he's a farrier of the Fae.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we don't know that, but we know he's like, we know
he's like a demon. There was a confrontation earlier.
Right. Okay.
Where he gets revealed.
Yeah. And this is one of the only people of the Fae that you've ever met. That's what he said. Yeah. So he said Fae. And he's of some like nondescript age, I feel like, because he's a fairy person. Yeah. You know, so we don't know how old he is. He could
be 1,000.
Yeah, but he's studying under Kvothe.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is he doing? Is he like a sidekick that he meets at some point? Like, is he...
Yeah, when do we come across him?
Yeah, and...
It's got to be like some Book 3 stuff, right?
I would think so. I mean, maybe they've given me some hints in Book 2 that I've missed, but like... Because there are some fan theories that I could bring up, but I don't want to yet. But he calls him Reishi or Reshi, and nobody in town thinks that's weird. They're just like, oh, that's what he calls him. And, we don't have any, like, anything to compare that language to, you know, so we can't really figure out what that name is or what that means to him, or if it's just the name that he calls him when they met or whatever. And, But Bast is like the most concerned with getting Kvothe back to normal. Like there's obviously something huge going on that he needs Kvothe back to normal to fix. And I don't know if it's in this world or if it's the demon world and that's where all the Skraeling are coming from or what's going on.
You think he wants to get him back to normal because he needs him to fix something?
I think he needs him to fix... I feel like there's some sort of... This is me just thinking. I don't think that I got this from anything in book two, but I think that there's some sort of like portal to this like demon realm, like maybe there are demons over the mountain and we just never knew. Like maybe that's what all the fairy people are like, because they were saying that these are from that land.
It
gave me
the impression that it was another dimension.
Okay, so to me it makes...
They don't say so much because they don't have like that kind of science in the story.
Yeah.
But it sounds like other dimension stuff.
Okay, well I feel like Kvothe must have found some super master name of something that then cursed him to like no longer have like some of his abilities, or maybe he's just accepted being coached so fully that he doesn't think he can do any of his things anymore. But... to me, it feels like there's some sort of rip or portal where these Skraeling, where the demons are coming from. It's not like a rip open into like a happy fairy dimension. It's like a rip open into this demonic hell fairy dimension. And I feel like Bast, I'm not 100% sure how he was introduced to Chronicler. Was there anything about like nobility or whatever? Like a prince? Did he say a prince? I feel like he said prince, like a prince of the Fae.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe he's like some princeling of the Faean people. Like he's like a third or fourth down the line. And like one of those sort of jobs, like they make that son go do this. And and they heard about Kvothe and they want him like to, I don't know. Like I feel like there's like he's trying to get Kvothe back to normal so that he can bring him to help fix the rip between these two worlds and this imbalance. And, that's just my speculation thinking around because who was that like monster guy that came in that the old Miller's, the big boy or whatever, who does he work for? The Smith's apprentice?
Oh yeah, he's the Smith's apprentice,
I forgot his name too. We learned it right at the end. It's like Dennis or something.
But the guy that he kills?
Yeah, that mercenary like that comes in like the last interlude.
Bast says that he's from, you know, he's of the Fae as well, that he's from whatever it is, it's from the other dimension also.
Okay, is this like one of those tower defense games? Like they sent the first wave and it was the Skraels and the second wave is mercenary, like shadow mercenaries?
Right, yeah.
That would be awful.
Yeah.
But also one thing Bast was saying, this isn't really related, I guess, to fairies, but like the Chronicler was not the first feeler he put out into the universe to get Kvothe like back to normal.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, is there any chance that he hired that mercenary to try and get Kvothe to snap back into it to become a hero again?
Oh.
Because I have a feeling, like, their lines on good and bad are a little different.
Sure,
it's probably more along the, like, ends justify the means kind of an attitude.
Right, yeah. That would be interesting, but it doesn't... because Chronicler recognizes him as one of the mercenaries that held him up the other day. And then, but then that mercenary doesn't react to, you know, being stabbed and all that sort of stuff until somebody starts beating it down with iron, which we know to have a negative reaction with the Fae. So it's the only thing that makes any sense is that it is something from the Fae that inhabited this human and somehow.
Oh no, that's worse.
And that's more or less what Bast says. He says it's what does he call it, a skin dancer or something like that, from a specific region in the Fae. And
let's just say demon. We're common folk,
right? So it's definitely something from the other area, the other place, the other side, whatever.
And there obviously is still some sort of like monarchy, right? That's what it'd be called, with a king or like a one world leader.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, no,
because they're leaving and like, there's a war going on, right?
It seems to just be against the rebels. There's something, there's like a single line at the end of the book that says something about like, oh, you know, we could say that he was, oh, they're talking about that mercenary, actually. They said that he was just like, you know, had gone war mad, against the rebels is what they say. So there's some sort of, you know, divide, some civil war in the country.
I have a feeling the rebels are going to be like Star Wars rebels. There's
several kingdoms. Or like several coalitions at the very least. There's like the Commonwealth where the university is, and then the Kaled, the Aturan Empire, Modeg, those are Ventus. We hear about those all the time. And then there's even more besides that, just on this map that's right here.
Can I see the map? I've never looked at it.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah. So there's several countries.
Well, what do you want to see from Quoth in book 2? How do you want to see him grow? Learn the names of all things like Taberlin the Great?
I guess so, right? That's the goal. That's always what his dream was. I'm ready for him to not be 15 anymore, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a little frustrating. It's not even like, you know, just ignorance because, or it's not stupidity because of ignorance, you know, like where it's like, immaturity. How could he know this? You know, mm-hmm. He's only 15. Of course he doesn't know the answer to this question. It's not stuff like that. It's like, he's just dumb. Mm-hmm. I can see the story coming from, you know, the beginning of the chapter. And then whenever the moment comes, he's like, what?
Yeah.
Just like almost clueless, which isn't, you know, the person that we're supposed to be reading about, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm over the whole Dena thing.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for him to move on from that. He's obviously not going to. We know that much. But I wish he would.
But she's the girl.
It's so, like, what's the phrase I'm looking for? It's, like, overly pure. He's, like, such the hero that, of course, he only ever loved one woman and never even fucking slept with her. Or anything.
Well, he's only 15. I didn't even like. Will. Jeez.
Or at least up to this point, they're talking about like how, like, you know, they haven't kissed or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's so devoted to her. And his friends are like, dude, you should just try to move on. And he's like,
how about Phyllis? She's hot.
You don't
likes
understand.
You.
Yeah. And all the every other female character that we come across is into him in some capacity, it seems like.
Just Fella.
She's definitely the only one that has exhibited any sort of obvious feelings, but like,
I mean, Davy's not.
Davy's kind of flirty.
Yeah, but that's just her.
And then Ari is obviously strange, but she's like obviously into him to some degree. She might not recognize it as romantic feelings because she's, you know, crazy, but she definitely kind of needs him in her life to some degree. She gets mad at him for not showing up after 4 days.
Yeah, it's like his like sister.
So he's just got everything around him, you know, like we were saying last episode, it's like the kind of typical harem anime situation where everybody's into him. He might only be into one person or is just entirely clueless about all of it because he's got to save the world or whatever, you know, just a little prototypical.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you'll really enjoy the second book.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets rid of a lot of like the Because that's pretty, like, that's like a common, like, typical, like, story thing, you know, like the guy. It's just like, I feel like this next book really just lets loose. It's good. I don't know. Yeah. I'm really excited for you to want to read
that's
it.
That's good. I don't like his character right now.
Yeah.
I don't like him. I really don't like his attitude with Dina. His really kind of, towards the end of these last two chapters, when that's the majority of what's going on.
Yeah, I didn't
either.
I skipped a part of that, one of the last chapters. I was like, I don't want to hear this shit.
Yeah. I just don't like his attitude towards Dina. His sort of like, I'm the best friend and I'm the only one that's right for her. But she's a wild thing that, you know, doesn't belong to anybody and she can't stay still or, you know, whatever kind of just like justifications. He's just like, is deifying this girl who is stringing him along. And may or may not have feelings for him, but kind of doesn't matter if she does or doesn't because she's kind of like a bad person.
It's not as bad as it is in this. It's not. It feels very Snape-y in this book, and it loses its cringe in the next mm-hmm. book.
Okay,
because you're right. It's because he's 15. It's because he's immature. Yeah. He has no experience. Like through this next section. Well, in the next book, like I almost feel like he's this way as a plot device for a thing in the next section, which is like you know, and then he like matures, and then it's like it's cool. He does a lot of character growth. It might be this book that makes me like him so much.
Yeah,
one of the few. Well, I wouldn't say few, but one of the sequels that I'd say like I like more than the first one. The first one's like fun to set the story, like set it up, but. It's such a like daunting thing to tell somebody like, hey, this like 800 page book, the first 800 page book, it's a good setup for the second book, which is 1200 pages. So,
right, yeah.
So have fun.
Yeah.
I was just saying to Will before the show that like, that's why these books are so long. It was like visually, it's one of the reasons I never got into the Wheel of Time series because all of those books were at least 500 pages, if not 800 pages, and they were all so long,
right,
had so many
like
characters.
30 of them or whatever.
Yeah, and there were so many of them that I was like, am I going to seriously devote this much of my life to these guys, right, to a series that's not even over? Like, I can't finish it.
Yeah, that is a series that I will never read.
Yeah, I can't imagine all of them are even good either.
On board from the get go.
Yeah.
It was just like, or like maybe like 5 books in or something like that.
He's like your buddy from high school. It's like, all right, I'll read the next one.
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think I had a lot
of. The length of these books is kind of crazy too.
Yeah. I had a lot of like misgivings about like suggesting this book even because of that. It was so long and it's just like, I don't want to force you to read something that's going to take a lot of time, you know?
But, yeah.
I don't know. Having you like the first one and feel this way about it, I'm glad we don't have to wait for the second one.
Right.
Because the second one is way better. It makes
that's good.
Yeah, I really, really like it.
Yeah.
One of the mini shoot-off stories is a Bast short story, which is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It has no
consequence.
It has no consequence to the story. So you can read that whenever you want, if anybody wants to read that one. I think the Ari book, Slow Regard of Silent Things, we can read it now. But I think it's like a prequel sort of thing, like when Ari first was going into the Underthing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think she knows Kvothe in this one. I think it's like a complete Ari story in the Underthing and her, how she thinks. And I haven't read that one. So if you do want to read that, it might be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine Ari like Sue Asui from My Hero.
Oh,
the frog girl.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just because she lives in the sewer.
Yeah, and I imagine her walking around on all fours like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and like sort of like kerplopping as she walks, like a plop, 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 you know, like.
Okay.
And walking on all fours.
Mm hmm. Maybe.
Does she not walk on all fours? She walks around
so.
Like.
I mean, she probably has to for some tunnels and stuff like that, but I think whenever they're outside, she's just walking upright.
Yeah, but probably hunched over because she's been on all fours all the time,
maybe
just like Asui.
Bit. Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I can believe that, sure.
No, that's just what I imagine.
Hmm.
It's weird. Like, I sort of just imagine her vibe as a character, not even necessarily exactly what she looks
like. The frog stuff.
Yeah.
Let's compare all the characters to My Hero characters.
Okay.
No. That would take too long. I'd be cutting out chunks of silence for days.
Yeah, as we're sitting here just like, who would be this guy? I honestly don't even feel like that much happened in this last section. It was just like, it was really just like running into the Drakus, chasing after the Chandrian, illegal access to the archives, revenge on Ambrose while also becoming R'hllar, while also learning the name of the wind, and then like getting money so you can pay Devi back.
And get a new, better loot.
Yeah, and that town loved him, you know? So like, and then he found like that one little girl had like a dream about the pot or something with the Chandrian on it. So he's got like...
But yeah,
he's got a lead, I guess. Yeah. So,
although it's just that only lead is just that, yes, it was the Chandrian almost certainly. Because the artwork that she saw in the pot was just literally like, you know, that's the Chandrian and their signs. So I guess, was them.
I guess maybe their signs would be helpful to know or how many there are. But I don't feel like I could tell them much more than that.
Yeah.
And then Dena's damn sponsor. What are they called?
They were calling him like Lord Ash or something Mr. Ash.
But what do they call them? Patron.
Oh, yeah. Patron. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So her patron, we don't know him. He's like a super bad guy, or at least like a kind of twisted guy. Like he beat Dena.
Yeah.
I mean, for a good cause.
Potentially. But... Yeah. Supposedly for like the lie for the story.
And I mean, Quoth was like, I would have found another way, which is like, okay, maybe you would have because you were like a clown back in the day and you could do the makeup so you look like you guys got beat up, but like, whatever. Right. So I don't know. There's a lot of little mysteries I feel like that they opened up in this section. So if we wanted to like really break it all down and try to figure it out. Because maybe is him killing the kings like him killing the Chandrian, or the Chandrian considered king? Do they have control over the king? I don't know what's going on. There's like two overarching stories. There's one overarching story with like
his vengeance. That's the
current plot line of him just like being coat and like living, you know, and like the fairies and shit that like are coming over the mountain. And then there's like the second plot line of like the second like overarching plot line of like the Chandrian and that like and the king that he ends up killing. Like what big event is gonna, like when does that happen? Like how much foreshadowing are we gonna do to that? Like I'm saying that from like reading 800 pages, not pretending I don't know anything in the next book. Like, I'm sure there's progress. I don't remember if there is, like, fully or not. But like I was just saying, I really don't actually know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, like, the two big overarching background plots.
Yeah.
While the main story is, like, being fleshed out. Because, like, we're getting Quoth's story.
What's that all about?
Like, we're getting Quoth's story, but it still feels like there's a secret, bigger story in his story, as well as the main storyline with the bigger secret storyline going on in that one. So it's like there's so many layers. No wonder he doesn't want to release the last book. It's just like, to put it all together.
It's too much.
Yeah, and it's been so many years.
I get the feeling that, and we'll see more in the second book, obviously. I get the feeling that it's going to be to some degree like a Lost situation where they just start telling so many stories and so many things are happening all the time. And a lot of them will just end up never being talked about again for whatever reason.
Hmm.
It probably won't be as big a disparity as Lost was.
Yeah.
Lost was like,
I hope not.
I think it ended up being like, probably like, this is just a stupid number that I'm throwing out, but like 65% of like the questions that got asked in that show never got answers.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be that crazy, but I think that it wouldn't surprise me if by at the end of this book, I'd be like, okay, this and that probably aren't going to matter ever again.
I have a feeling that there are some people, like some fans that are hardcore, like book dissectors and stuff that have taken these like, you know, 2000 plus pages of literature and like really dissected like what could be behind the stone door, like who the, like these big overarching plot lines and things that they have a good idea. Cause I'm sure there's a lot of Easter eggs and things that he's saying that'll matter later. Like, this is supposedly his, like, life's work. Like, he's had the whole thing mapped out, but, like, then fledging it all out is different. You know, he's got, like, the skeleton, but then putting all the little bits and pieces to make the body and the, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's extremely daunting. I wouldn't envy him the position.
I wonder how much is predicted correctly or is predictable versus, like, he's leaving us in the dark on a lot of stuff. Because, like, for me, I'm falling for it. You know, like, I'm in the dark. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm just enjoying the show. But for the super fans, like, I wonder how much they figured out.
Well, I mean, they say if you get, you know, 1,000 monkeys in a room with typewriters, you'll come up with Shakespeare at some point.
That's simulation theory, Will. No. That's the multiverse theory, Will. Right?
No, it's just laws of probability.
Yeah, the multiverse theory. Like,
at some
theory.
Point, it'll... Well, I mean, those...
I always think of them as the same, because it's like, sure, in some other dimension, there's a group of monkeys that wrote Hamlet, but... Like, statistically, I'm sure, like, if there are a billion, if there's an infinite number of universes with all the different possibilities of things going on. That's always just what I would think of. Sorry. Really.
And they're definitely related in discussion, but I think the saying is less about metaphysical laws and more about, you know, what we know exists in front of us, which is statistics.
Yeah.
Statistically speaking, one monkey will end up with Hamlet if you get enough of them.
So are you saying that Patrick Rothfuss will monkey his way through an ending? At this point, I feel like he was given the first two books and now he's trying to finish the third book, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least that's the position he feels like he's in. Because, I mean, last I read, like I probably said on the last podcast, I was reading his Goodreads and people were leaving 5-star reviews for the third book. And then, like, a comment from the author was like, hey, I saw that there were a bunch of 5-star reviews for my book. I have it, like, I have the current outline for, like, or the rough draft of it written right now. But I think what I have is something more of like a 3.5 to a 4. So if you guys could send me the 5-star copy, I would really appreciate that. And I don't know, it's just silly. So, like, that just made me think, like, okay, he's got it written, but now he's got the worst part to deal with, which I'm sure is the editing and the rereading and the connecting the dots and making sure he isn't leaving too many loose ends untied and satisfying all the fans while also probably having to satisfy, like, his publishers. And it's going to be like a 2,000-page book, I feel like. It's going to just have to be a massive Bible style novel. Like, it's just, I don't know how he's going to fit everything in, you know, unless Kvothe is like 20. He's like 19 right now, running
in real life or in the present day. What if somebody just smashes through the tavern halfway through day 3 and we have to abandon the story and just go back into whatever the present is? And that's how it's not a 2,000-page book.
I'm going to slip my wrists over the doors of stone and bleed out until God tells me the rest of the until God tells me the rest of Kvothe's story. I'm not going to not get the rest of it, right? I can do a blood sacrifice. I don't know. I want the ending so bad, and I know that Patrick Rothfuss is writing for... He's doing his, like, passion projects now. Like, he's got his entire life to write his epic fantasy series. I have a feeling he's got a chip on his shoulder. Like, I'm not going to make it anything more than a trilogy. Like, I've said it was going to be a trilogy, so it's going to be a trilogy. I'm going to get it all in this last book. But I'm at the point where it's just like, I just want filler arc. Like, I just want some content.
Just something, yeah.
Yeah. But I guess that's why we have those two little, side shoot books. One with Bast and one with Ari.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly his two favorite characters, other than our hero. I don't know. I'm just guessing. No. I feel like they could be.
Just blind guesses.
Yeah, I mean, why else would you write a story about them?
I don't know.
Otherwise, you would have picked Devi.
They're the most different people in the story so far.
What about Elodin?
he's too important, being like a teacher and stuff like that. It would be kind of weird to have an off story of him.
Yeah, his story of even learning the name of the wind was kind of lame. He was like, I got in an argument with my teacher. Yeah. It's like, all right.
Who's still a teacher?
I couldn't think of any nerd names. I was going to throw out a nerd name, and then I didn't want to use a real person's name that we knew. But yeah, like, all right, nerd, you're going to learn the name of the wind in an argument over your homework or whatever.
Right, yeah. Dumb.
We don't know anything about his background either, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
He could be a rich lordling for all we know. Did you take any notes?
I did not.
A la verga, Will?
I just didn't have any notes to take. I mean, like you said, not really anything happened. He quotes Gandalf at one point.
Did he?
Yeah. Whenever he's talking to the mayor and the constable of Trebin, after, you know, the Drakus attack and all that, he realizes that he's kind of, like, has the upper hand, and that the townspeople have already decided that he's like a send from Telu and all that sort of stuff. Right. And he starts like kind of like taking an affectation of that, and he's, you know, starts talking all big and stuff. Whenever he leaves the room, he says, "I have pressing matters away south," which is what Gandalf tells the dwarves and Bilbo whenever he leaves them at the edge of Mirkwood.
Deep cut. That's awesome. That was for sure a shout out to Lord of the Rings, or to The Hobbit, right? That's what you were quoting?
It had to have been.
That must.
I think it's the exact same phrasing.
That's of course what it is. He's such a, like, of course he read that series. Of course he did.
Right, yeah.
I mean, take one look at the guy. I don't know if you have, but take one look at him and you're like, and for sure.
Tell me
sure
he has not read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, this is one of those things that's on TikTok that's viral, but it's like, tell me your blah, blah without telling me. Like, or show me that you're blah, blah without telling me.
Oh.
And it's just like, that would be like, show me that you've read Lord of the Rings without telling me. And it's like just a picture of Patrick Rothfuss. Like, look at him. He's read the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I read that today. And
you read the Lord of the Rings today?
Yeah, the whole trilogy. But no, I read that section today and I was like, oh, that's just a straight-ass Gandalf quote.
Gandalf. I didn't know Gandalf. You were here. Okay. I guess I didn't take many notes, so sorry to tear you apart for not taking any. I wrote that coat means disaster in Kilvin's language, because it was like Ciaru and Karen coat or whatever, and it was like something disaster. And I was like, write that down. Because
I do remember seeing coat come up.
And I was like, why did he pick his name as disaster, dork?
Well, because he's so fucking melodramatic.
Yeah. I mean, he grew up a drama kid. What can you expect? And then my next note is my Netflix information. And then my next note is a stone door or the four plate door. There's a big, when Master Loden asked Kvothe, I don't remember if he asked him if he had any questions or he's like something about being a R'hllar, doesn't matter. But he was he asked him what was behind the stone door, mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, like no small questions for you, like,
yeah.
And I was just like, oh, what's behind that freaking door? Something it's probably important. Like the name of all things,
right? That's where all the names are. That's the name box.
The Chandrian are in there.
That's when they just chill out there. Yeah, they have a, you know, they pay rent and shit.
What other thing could be behind there? Just like gold. a ton of gold.
A shit ton of gold. All the gold in the world. Technology. What if it's like the other side of the gate in Fullmetal? And you go through it
the
and
door
you end
of
up
stone.
In a different
place. That's the portal to the fairy world.
Oh, that's maybe what it is. That makes sense. Maybe that's where he meets Bast. Because he does say at one point, in like the long interlude, whenever the demon comes through,
mm-hmm.
he tells Bass, he's like, it is my fault. It's my fault that the Skrill are here. It's my fault that the war is going on. It's my fault that this and that. And you know it, Bast. And Bast is like, he doesn't have like a response.
Oh my gosh.
So he does something that maybe changes the way that the world is.
He gets expelled. He throws a fit. Breaks the
maybe
door
of stone.
He gets expelled
because he breaks the door.
That's a
good
reason to expel
him. But we don't know what the effects are going to be yet until, like, you know, partway through the third book or something where, like, the big thing happens.
He just, like, what if he just, like, cracks it, but that's enough to, like, leak massive amounts of...
Right. However he gets expelled has to do with Ambrose, because he says so. he says that Ambrose, you know, ends up, he Ambrose just learned to bide his time. Because he's
Ambrose breaks his lute again.
Yeah, he just breaks it again, like the next day.
He calls the name of the wind.
He says, you know what, motherfucker?
He calls the name of the wind, breaks the dwarf stone. They expel him.
Right.
Never gets to go to the
archive. But Kvothe was talking about how he figured that Ambrose maybe learned his lesson because it was such a big deal what happened this time. And all that really happened was that he got whipped a few more times and got promoted again, just like last time. But that as he then finds out later that Ambrose hadn't learned his lesson, he just learned to bide his time. And the next, whenever he finally did get his revenge, would lead to my expulsion. He says something like that. So whatever it is has to do with Ambrose again.
He sucks, but, dude. Like how much? Oh, man, I was just sitting here thinking, like, for Kvothe to not seek any wit, like any lashes for Ambrose, was just like, hey, you're a noble, the nobleling or whatever. Like, if it came down to it, like, I don't know if Ambrose would have taken the lashes, because it's like, you're gonna cut my skin. Like, I'll have my father.
Yeah, well, I think he wanted to go for his suspension from the Arcana more so than
right
that, and so he maybe thought like, if I don't see, you know,
I just thought that he was like, I don't want him to get whipped. Like, I don't want anyone to get whipped. That sucks that I got whipped.
I figured that he was bargaining. That he was like, if I don't ask for this, then I'm more likely to get something.
See, I would have played my cards for the whipping and seen if he would have stayed for the whipping, because you can just not get that and leave.
Yeah.
He just like, I don't accept. And him being like a lordling, I don't know if he would have wanted to get whipped.
Right.
Because it would have broken his skin probably. And
yeah. Well, I don't think that.
I don't know. It just was so douchey that Ambrose was like, I still seek four lashes or whatever he did.
Or whatever it was.
Like,
you
freaking turd. Like,
yeah, he just sucks. He's just the bad guy. You know, he's a bad guy because we need a bad guy to be able to just be the bad guy.
He's got
to
be like hot though, right?
I think that like,
or charming. Like,
most rich people were hot in like these situations, right? Because they were able to take care of themselves more than anything. There we go. You know, whereas people who didn't have any money don't get to get anything, you know, taken care of. They can't, like, they're, you know, they're dirty.
Yeah, Kvothe's hair was black sick before he took a bath to get out of Tarbien.
Yeah. So I think that rich people were just kind of like inherently hotter than other people in settings like this because they, you know, have the means of being hotter.
Yeah, like why celebrities have like the eternal youth factor or whatever, because they have the means to take care of
right
themselves in some more elaborate ways than we do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I could never live by Tom Brady's health plan. I don't have the means to be able to.
Yeah. Okay, Tarbien's not that far from the university. Didn't realize that.
Well, I think they only stopped in like, they only had like one stop on the way, didn't they?
Emory? What was the stop?
I can't remember.
Come on. I don't see anything in between except for Imre, but that's sort of like out of the way. Like, you wouldn't be beelining from Tarbien.
Yeah.
I think didn't Dennis say she was going to Imre? Imre's where we just were, right? Wait,
that's
where
the,
were
we? Imre's just like two miles away from the university.
That's and where so they, that's where the
they just go. It's like across like a street, like a creek or a river or something like that. And I think that, you know, they just cross the river just to go there because that's where like the cool places are.
Okay, so then that's exactly what he did. He takes a caravan from Tarbien to basically to Imre. Oh, that's where the it's just little print, the second dot. I thought the university. Why would the university be somewhere without a road to it? I'm dumb. It's the other dot next to Imre. I just thought that was one big dot. Ooh, I'm getting old,
yeah,
man.
I need close.
I need my glasses. This is dope, dude. This little map. Will you buy me a huge map for my wall of this world?
Sure.
Let's just take your projector and blast it on the new wall.
And just leave it on all the time. Oh, yeah, and then just draw
when
it.
We have a new podcast studio, we should draw it on the back wall. Yeah, and we could do Middle Earth on the other one. On your wall, we could do Middle Earth. And my wall, we could do this one. Europe.
Europe.
<yeah. laughs> Whatever this place is.
Modified Europe.
Yeah. I think that's it for me. I feel like I'm just looking forward to us getting into the next book. There's so many new things.
Do you think if they had gotten any of the money that they had thought they were going to get from the drugs or the Dracus, that Dena would have just stayed around and then they would end up being together and we wouldn't have to do this stuff?
Yeah, just the end.
Yeah, like it's just over. They have enough money. It wouldn't have lasted them for years or whatever, but they say that they could have, you know, lived that way for a couple of months pretty comfortably without having to worry about anything.
Mm-hmm. I think Dina might have stayed like around, kind of like how she was always around. Mm-hmm. Like Quoth could kind of find her, but she's always just a couple towns away. She like never puts her roots down anywhere. I feel like she's still too immature as well as Quoth. Like they're both still too young.
Mm-hmm.
for even if they were set up, say, even for like a year, I feel like it would have been just at some point in between terms or whatever that Dina might have just picked up and gone somewhere, because she also seems the type that this is going to sound a dumb comparison, but she seems like the type that would never retire from working. Like retire. She it's just like if she was at home just like trying to pass her time or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I think she'd go crazy. She seems like too, just the way they describe her, that she seems like too, like she's caught in the wind herself. Like the name of the wind is Dina or something, you know, like yeah. She is always like floating freely like the wind. And, she's always moving. And just like Quoth, he grew up a trooper. He's like it's weird for him to be in one spot for so long. I feel like he wants to be on the road and traveling. And I feel like Dina's going to die because she's not with us right now. Like, unless she's behind the Dwarf Stone. Like, I mean.
Right.
I don't know. I would like for it to end.
You traded her for Bast.
Right. I would like for it to end happily, you know, with Quoth and Dina together. Or I don't even know. Because that's the love story. So that would be, like, the only person I guess he could really get with that it'd be like, okay, that worked out. But I just don't think that that's going to be how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, probably not. I think he's supposed to be, like, too much of the tragic hero to be able to have that, like, tie up the way he wants.
Yeah. And if they do have it, it'll be one of those, like, and things were good for a little while. Yeah. You know, like, and we were happy until...
For a while.
Yeah, for a while. Dun, dun, dun. The Door of Stone breaks open and all the monsters from all the levels of hell came to feast on our souls. This book just goes biblical. Like, it throws all the magic out. It's like Teilu and all of his... Does Teilu have angels? Are there angels in this book?
I don't know what the status of Teilu is either.
Yeah,
because he's supposedly... He's the religion of the modern times and Kavos times as a kid. But in one of the stories that gets told, it seems like there's somebody above Teilu.
Maybe Teilu's like Jesus, and some people believe in the guy above Jesus, and they don't believe Teilu was like the coming of... You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just to put it in our terms. I really don't know. I don't know that. I'm not very... The religion in this series hasn't interested me as much as other things. Mm-hmm. I know it's... I feel like it's going to matter. The way Fella described the battle at the university over the archives, you know, like the battle over the organization of the archives.
Mm-hmm.
She said it was a holy war, which I was like, why would you say those words? There's a fan theory that who's the guy that runs the archives?
Master Arwell? Lauren.
Okay. There's a fan theory that Lauren is part of the Aemir, which is like that holy...
From the one of the dead empires.
Yeah, so there's like this theory that he's part of the Aemir who have like gone into secret now.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I feel comfortable bringing that up as a fan theory is because the theory comes from Quoth doing his research on his first day in the university in the Arcanum, like when Master Lauren himself comes to tell Quoth not to like be looking up childish things or whatever. And mm-hmm. he gives him a little bit of the history of the Aemir to like try to... I'm sure he doesn't think of Quoth as a threat, especially if he's part of the Aemir. Just as a professor, I'm sure he doesn't. But especially if he's part of this secret Illuminati of this universe, you know. And that's probably a bad comparison. Illuminati's not holy. Like Freemason. They're like based in Christianity, I think. Doesn't matter. I don't need to make a comparison. But I think he's... I feel like that's one of the fan theories that I really like. I don't know. As I was re-listening to the interaction between Lauren and Quoth in that moment, I remember thinking like, okay, it's a little bit of a stretch. It's like perfect timing.
Yeah.
It seems like if you were going to get reprimanded by a teacher, it also seems like he played it the best way he could to not, like, that's exactly what one of the Aemir would do so that you wouldn't, you know, like how, mm-hmm. how like, oh, that's exactly what you would say if you were working for the government, like that you don't work for the government. So I don't know. Either he played it off perfectly and he is part of the Aemir, or he was just a teacher saying, like, looking out for a student, saying like, hey, you're going to have a hard enough time.
Right.
You don't need more rumors about you looking up fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
Which I just feel like him dogging on him for like trying to learn something. It's not like he's going around saying, hey, you're really into the Hardy Boys right now. Like, you need to quit reading so much fiction.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going and telling students to stop reading fiction. So it's a little odd for the master librarian to come over and tell you like, hey, like, it's very cool of him to make it come off like he's giving him advice, but it's also very weird for him to tell, like, to censor someone's reading, you know, when it's a place of learning and you mm-hmm. can look up anything, even if it is boyish fancy, you know?
Right. Well, he definitely knows something beyond common knowledge, because he phrases it as like, oh, you're just, you know, it's good to be curious about things, but maybe be more subtle about it instead of just asking for, you know, these things that are commonly held to be like childish or whatever. But then
what if that's like the initiation to become part of the Order Aemir? Like you have an interest and you start looking into them, and then you get confronted by one and told to stop.
That's how you get scouted.
Yeah. But like both like failed the test or whatever to like he missed something, like how, mm-hmm. oh, we don't know this thing yet. But, you know, like secret handshakes and stuff, how like,
but I think for him to have seen that Kavoth had put in those two requests and then been able to draw up enough information to be like, I should go talk to this kid about it, would suggest to me that he knows something about the Chandrian and the way that, you know, if you get a little too interested, you sometimes get in trouble with them, you know. And so he knows something about the truth of the Chandrian or the Aemir. You know, he knows more about that situation than conventional knowledge has.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he was like, okay, he's like this curious about them, this young, and he's like here on day one, like researching this. He's clearly got more reason than not to be looking into this. It's not just a child's story to him.
Yeah, what's
so
his
I need to
deal?
Go talk to him because, you know, I need to deter him from doing so openly, lest he be caught. That's how I interpreted that.
What's the deal, Quoth? Such a mouthful.
A lot of this book is a mouthful.
Burn.
There's a lot.
Will knows the name of fire. He just burned Patrick Rothfuss.
Got him.
Clip it. Send that to him. If Patrick Rothfuss replied to that, that would be the funniest for him to even like reply to such like...
That would be really funny.
To our huge podcast. That'd be so flattering.
Yeah. We're so important.
We need a tweet at him though after this book and just tell him like, hey, well, on to the next one. Just finished your book on our podcast.
Perhaps.
We did for Jonah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we OG did, which made me a lifetime fan, but did we do it this time? Is she too big for us? Did she not retweet us? No, I'm just kidding. Did she not reply?
No, she did.
Oh, good. Okay. But I thought she got big for her britches. Still a lifetime fan.
A lot bigger
care.
Than we are. That's for damn sure.
Good for her, man. That second, her book was good.
We aren't anything. That was a really good book.
And
I do keep thinking about it.
You'll see why in this book I was like, this feels like a side book of the other one.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's this, I mean, Felurian, I'll just tell you that. Like, her story is pretty similar. She's like one of the seductress fae type stories. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she's also like Felurian is also like the, I don't know if she's like a god, but she's like the, embodiment of beauty. So like if you're going to call someone like a princess or beautiful or so, whatever the term is in our language, I don't really know, okay, without sounding corny, but I don't know, like a Barbie doll, like, I don't know, whatever you call people, like that, that's sort of the term in this world, like making a comparison to Felurian would be like giving them the highest of praise and beauty, you know,
like an Aphrodite.
Yeah, that's who it is. That's the parallel to our world. At the end of this podcast, we should just do a final podcast of all the parallels to our world. That would only be fun for me. I would love that, actually. I would love to sit down at the end of like this book and be like, so what do you think? Like, and we can do that on the podcast. That'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, to like come together and try to figure out fan theories, especially how like how much better your memory is than mine, and how and the details you coming into it through for the first time with a little bit of my bias as well as like your own just
a different perspective.
Yeah thank you, your perspective. I was like coming up with all the words that like embody perspective.
You're like reading the thesaurus backwards.
Yeah, so I think that'd be a lot of fun, because I had never even considered what could be behind like the door of stone that could actually be like what it is, and it could be very related to the Fae realm, you know, like that could be the portal, you know, and that might not be why he was expelled from the university, but I know
something to do with it.
Yeah, and then in that first section we were reading with that the boy that like recognized him, you know, from playing in the Aeolian, he was like the stone is still cracked where you broke it. I mean, I feel like when he was saying that, it was a battle out in like a I always imagine there being a fountain.
Like a town square or something like
that. Yeah, like a fountain, a bunch of cobblestone. And like there was like a big battle out there, and he happened to have like blown up the fountain in the middle. Yeah. And like they can't even repair it still to this day. But I mean, what if that's just what it looks like on top of the university, and that's connected to the, like that was on top of the door of stone or whatever. Like, I don't know. I really don't know, but the fun potential for us to create fan theories for what might happen. It's just going to be great finally to have somebody to actually like bounce ideas off with. I don't understand how the magic works still, just having the belief that something is going to do what you want it to do, as well as not having the belief. Like then you make it like a logical fallacy, so then you can manipulate it or something. Like I don't really understand what the crossover point is between believing the two things at the same time and then making it happen. Because is it just like, is he in a simulation and your belief is your guide through this world? Like, is he going to wake up at a Best Buy and
well, Best sort of says something about that whenever he's trying to explain to Chronicler what it is that's happened to Kvothe and why he's not like he used to be anymore. And it's because he doesn't believe that he is who he was. He thinks that he's this new person. He's the innkeeper now. And he's not a person who used to do all that stuff. And he talks about, you know, you humans have such a hard time understanding this. For whatever reason, y'all can't understand the difference between belief and reality, and how closely connected they are. Whereas in the Fae, it's something that we all grow up knowing.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
The magic has something to do with that, and that's part of them splitting their minds to manipulate it, is that they are existing in the real space as well as existing in whatever it is that they want it to be, what they want to believe that it is, to then make it so. So the way that they're manipulating it has something to do with that. I think that the deeper truth is that belief is reality. And how do you manipulate that? And the way that the humans have figured out how to do it thus far has been to do, you know, the mind splitting thing.
Wow.
And think of that. That's the way that I interpreted all that.
That sounds right.
And that's just purely based off of just what Best said in the last chapter. Kvothe is not Kvothe anymore because he doesn't believe that he is. He believes he's Coat.
Yeah, and that was,
and the power that belief has is so much more than anybody on this side of the dimensional plane, you know, can kind of fathom.
Mm-hmm.
And even Kavoth, who, you know, learns names of things and kind of and is so arcane that that's part of one of his titles, you know, is, you know, Kavoth the Arcane. Even he doesn't realize what he's doing to himself through belief, or maybe he does and is doing it on purpose.
Well, that's why I think in the first section I remember bringing up, like, remember when he started thinking of himself as Kavoth again?
He entirely changes.
But and then he goes into his story, but then after the... I don't know if it's after the mercenary. No, I think it's just whenever they go back into an interlude, it starts, he's just Coat again. Like, he snapped out of it. Like, he's still, he still doesn't believe that he was Kvothe. Like, or that he is Kvothe. He believes he was Kvothe and that he can never be him again. And it's so interesting that, like, you brought that up right now, because I never thought of that in relation to, like, your belief being related to how sympathy works, and then because that is, I mean, they do say that you believe the two things at once, and then your belief in the name, and also it's just, it feels to me like that must be like the thing behind the door of stone must just be like a portal to the Fey realm, and that must be why, like, it's just this central hub of all this knowledge, like everything was birthed there. Like, that might be why so many people lose their mind, because they're not only playing with this dual thinking that can make you go crazy, but you're playing with it in a space that's probably oozing this, like, Feyen, I don't want to say magic, but this, like, Feyen charm that probably makes it a little easier. Like, that's probably why they study there.
Right.
It's probably, Manette might be addicted to it. Yeah, I mean, he's addicted to something. He's addicted to something at the university. He might just be a workaholic, and that's like what he's addicted to. It's a pretty
easy life if you can manage it the way that he does.
Yeah.
Because he's only paying... Like, what was his tuition whenever we first meet him, and they're all talking about tuition, and Kavoth is afraid to bring up that he got paid to attend school. But he's got, like, one of the lowest.
It was like one and two is like a jot and a talent. Yeah, it was like nothing.
It was like two jots, one talent.
I feel like talents are more than jots.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's one and two is like one talent. So, like, one talent, two jots.
Yeah.
Which is, like, nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing compared to what Kavoth has to pay for his second semester.
Manette is teaching classes, like, in the fishery and stuff,
If I could go to school money, for, you know,
artificing,
almost nothing, and live in that, you know, part of that being, like, everything being taken care of as far as, like, living and eating, and I just get to have access to the university almost as a whole.
Yeah, you get to socialize and just study, learn teach things,
and, you know, do, you know, the work study stuff, like, he, you know, works, like you said, in Kilvin's you know, artificery.
Yeah, he's got a very unique situation too, because he doesn't want to leave, so he has no aspiration to get his guilder, which is that it's basically, it's
like your diploma.
Yeah, and all it is really, it's like it's a gram. It's a medallion that you wear, and it'll protect you from somebody trying to do sympathy to you. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty cool deal he's got set up. I mean, especially because that's where he's happy, Manette, doing his thing. Yeah, but
sounds like a sweet gig.
Yeah.
Just go to school forever, pay basically nothing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what else is going to, like, happen at the university. Like, I feel like Kvothe is going to ruin the university somehow. Like, well, no, because Chronicler... Well, the weird thing, too, is Chronicler was like, I heard that back when I was at the university. And I was like, how did you hear about Kvothe back when you were at the university? You're, like, a billion years old. Like, how did you hear about Kvothe back when...
He's that old.
Well, he's older than Kvothe. He's like an older guy. He's got, like, gray hair.
I remember him having gray hair, but then, like, the old man that's a part of the regulars comes in and calls him boy.
Yeah, but he's like a billion.
I don't think Chronicler could be above 40.
I thought he was in his 50s. 40, yeah, he might be in his 40s. I mean, he fought off that Skraeling kind of okay. For having no physical ability, you know, like, not being his thing at all.
Yeah, he didn't just, like, snap his arm in half.
Yeah, like, if he was a frail old man.
I assume that he's, like, in his, like, I don't think that he's over 40 even, and I think that Kvothe is, like, in his, like, mid to late 60s.
Kvothe?
Yeah. It's confusing.
He only looks 20, though. He only looks like he's in his 20s.
Yeah, but his eyes also change for different reasons. There's something else about Kvothe. He's not a regular human.
Yeah. You're probably right.
Because some people, guys, people's eyes don't change color, you know.
He said he's got the look of the Fae in him. That that guy at the Aeolian.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you got the look of the Fae on you or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Something about that, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not wholly human. There's something else going on there. Has to be. It's part of why he's so good at stuff.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what it is.
Day three. Gotta wait for it.
Yeah, because as far as I know, his parents are the people we were told that they were. Yeah. So, like, unless like, they were gifted they at could birth be, or, like, there's, but like, then maybe there's something happens. Else.
Like, maybe his dad's a secret hero or yeah. something like that, you know?
Oh, sorry. Or maybe, like, yeah. I mean, I know some stuff that Kvothe, like, levels up as a character, but I don't know if that necessarily would change him in this way. But, I mean, just like how the ring in The Lord of the Rings makes it so, like, I mean, if Kvothe had the one ring, he would look the same age, and he'd be right, 65 like or whatever. Life, yeah. And his eyes would probably seem like they were changing because they weren't the eyes of a 20-year-old, but like then he would smile and there wouldn't be any wrinkles, so you'd be like, oh no, he is 20. You know?
Yeah.
It could be something like that. Because I always get the feeling Kvothe is older than him, mm-hmm. even though they write it off like he's still young, like a young man, because they're like, you couldn't be more than 30. I feel like there must be some sort of time skip or jump that... Because Chronicler's talking about it, like, he heard about him back at the university.
Yeah, I don't know his university days.
Yeah, I don't know if that was like, hey, I stopped by the university to drop off some of my books. Or I used to work there. So, like, when I was at the university recently, I heard that story about you. Or if that's some foreshadowing stuff to the time-traveling thing. I know that I'm sure time works differently in the Fae. Of course it does. I'm sure it does. Yeah. Like, I don't know why it wouldn't, you know, of course there's got to be some time thing there. Like, it could be the exact same, or maybe there are, I don't even know, you know.
There always is.
Yeah, there's always something. It's a different dimension. So.
Right.
Put on your imagination cap, because it gets crazy.
Imagination cap.
Yeah, it gets a lot of fun in the next one. So I'm looking forward to us taking it on.
Yeah, we are going to read through chapter 32. Now, this is of book 2 in the Kingkiller Chronicle by Patrick Rothfuss. The title of it is The Wise Man's Fear.
Three things that all wise men fear. Can't remember what they all are. One of them is like the fury of a quiet man or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like I remember hearing that at some point.
Probably me talking about this book.
But that's, through chapter 32. It's close to like 275 pages or something. It's going to take us 4 weeks to read this.
Yeah. So the stop at chapter 33 called Fire, which is a dope title name.
You might even say that name is fire.
Do
people still say that?
That's lit, still a thing that people say? Of course online? They do. It's lit. Fire, okay. Fam.
It's fire, fam. Fire AF.
Just like Kvothe's hair and Ilion.
Oh, yeah, it's fire AF.
Ilion is fire AF.
Wow.
All right, well, you guys know how to find us at Instagram and Twitter, ears_stamps, and at anchor.fm/ears-stamps. That has links to all our social media, a way you can support us directly, and just the way we host the podcast. So shout out Anchor. And yeah, like Will was saying, you know what to read, A Wise Man's Fear. Up through chapter 32, stop at 33, fire. Yeah, we'll see y'all next week.
See y'all next week. I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
This is Dog Ears and Timestamps.